This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. With Donald Trump's ongoing threats to cut off federal funding to sanctuary cities, some activists are looking to the past for lessons learned under President Reagan. Anti-apartheid activists in the 1980s faced similar threats of cuts to federal funds under Reagan. A forthcoming report by social justice groups details how cities and states successfully fought off Reagan's threats. How can we apply those lessons to today? Joining me to help answer that question is Madeline Janis. She's the Executive Director of Jobs to Move America. Welcome to the program, Madeline.
Thank you very much.
So for those maybe among our young viewers, can you just give us a brief summary of that history, what it was that cities and states in the U.S. did around the anti-apartheid movement that irked Reagan so much he threatened to cut off funds?
Well, South Africa had a long history of racial oppression. It was, you know, institutionalized, legalized racial oppression, where the white majority ruled the country. And so for a long history, South Africa was a country where the white minority ruled by an iron hand, with an iron fist, the black majority. The white minority had all the rights, and the black majority had no rights, no rights to vote. Everything was legal discrimination. And by the late 1970s, there was a movement across the country, and people may remember Nelson Mandela, the leader of, and ultimately the president of Free South Africa, had been in prison for many, many, many years. And by the late 1970s, there was an international movement to pressure companies that were invested in South Africa to divest and to sanction those companies that were still invested. And South Africa has some of the most precious minerals in the world, 80% of chromium, platinum, things like that. So there was a lot of, and there still is, a lot of big corporate investment. So when Reagan got elected, he really made clear from the beginning in 1981 that he wanted the businesses to stay in South Africa, and he did not want any pressure from cities or state to force those companies to divest. And what we did is, and we got interested in this because there were long-term repercussions for what Reagan did, which I'll talk about in a minute. But we decided to go look back in history. We went into the Reagan Presidential Library and we dug up declassified documents, a treasure trove of declassified documents that talked about the lengths that the Reagan administration, with their business allies, went to really crush the anti-apartheid movement and pressure and take punitive measures against cities and states that were adopting these measures that would basically sanction any company that was invested in South Africa, would keep them from winning contracts, would divest pension funds from those companies, or banks that were invested would take money out of those banks. There were ultimately about 140 of those cities and states that adopted these laws, and there was a pitched battle going on during the 80s between the Reagan administration and cities and states that were not willing to have anything to do with the apartheid government of South Africa.
So today we have a movement to protect people not outside the United States, but inside the United States. So we have a growing sanctuary movement that basically declares cities and states with varying definitions as safe spaces for immigrants in that the police departments would not necessarily cooperate with federal ICE agents. This is something that predates Trump because we had a lot of deportations under President Obama as well. What has Trump threatened to do to these so-called sanctuary cities and states that mirrors what Reagan threatened to do?
Well, after reviewing thousands of pages of documents and all kinds of secondary sources, and really going through a lot of things ourselves with trying to understand the current situation. So the federal government provides trillions of dollars in federal grants. It's about less than a trillion a year that goes to state and local governments to do everything. A lot of the money that cities and states use for things like transportation or water infrastructure or healthcare or all those things come from the federal government. And the Reagan administration went to great lengths to kind of stretch the interpretation of the law to threaten to withhold federal funds from those cities and states that didn't rescind these anti-apartheid sanctions laws. Very similar to what Trump is doing right now, with threatening to withhold funding, federal funding, which is, urgently needed by cities and states, if they don't comply with Trump's policies. And there are also things that we saw in the primary documents of major business organizations and groups that represented the interests of major businesses, almost setting up offices inside the White House to basically coordinate directly with the White House on how to target and retaliate against mayors and state legislators and governors that were bucking federal policy.
Any
So there's
sense, Madeline, that Trump is literally taking a page out of Reagan's book, to do what he's doing on sanctuary cities? Do you have any understanding that he has studied, if that's a word that ever really enters his lexicon, but has studied the past and tried to repeat what Reagan is doing, or is that just coincidence?
No, I think that I don't think necessarily that Trump has done that, but I do think there are a lot of the same players, a lot of the same people that were responsible for Reagan's policies are in the Trump administration or advisors to the Trump administration. And absolutely, they are taking a page from the Reagan playbook. Very similar tactics and legal interpretations that were created by Reagan to stop the anti-apartheid movement in cities are still in effect. And those kind of legal interpretations, those tools, that the elements of the playbook, if we can use that phrase, are still in place. And a lot of the people who developed that playbook are still around. They're a bunch of years older, but they're still around. And so there's a lot of things to learn. And one of the interesting things we learned by doing this deep research, and by the way, the research will be live on June 27th on a website, and it's will be searchable. There's about 300 pages of primary documents and a 30-page report
And
that
that website is
document.
jobstomoveamerica.org. We'll post a
That's
link to that from our
correct.
website later today.
Yes, and that will go live on the morning of June 27th, and it's just fascinating to look at.
So,
But
what are the things that cities and states did? How did they successfully beat back Reagan's threats? Was it lawsuits? Was it grassroots pressure? A combination?
it was a combination. I think we look at in the report, we look at two cities as a kind of a contrast in tactics and strategies for how to fight back. We look at the city of New York. The city of New York under Mayor Koch, then Mayor Koch, passed a pretty weak anti-apartheid sanctions law that basically gave extra points to those companies that were not invested in apartheid South Africa. The Reagan administration and the Reagan Justice Department, they developed an analysis and they put out an opinion that said that that unless the city of New York repealed that law or at least did not apply it to anything with federal funds, they would lose hundreds of millions of dollars of federal funds. So it was a direct threat to withhold federal funds. And ultimately, Mayor Koch folded. And he basically agreed to pull back the law and to comply with the federal government. And that analysis of, you know, the reasons why this, you know, law could, you know, did not meet the federal law still exists today, have harmed cities across the country. And we could talk about that in a minute. But you contrast that with the city of Baltimore. And now the city of Baltimore had mostly black majority city, black mayor, mostly black city council. The city of Baltimore passed a law that divested all of its pension funds from any company that doing business in South Africa. They actually moved over $1 billion in investments into what was called a Free South Africa or South Africa Free Fund. The business allies of the Reagan administration and trustees of the pension fund challenged that in court. And the city of Baltimore, they fought tooth and nail. They organized.
So it was the Reagan administration that took the city of Baltimore to court over this?
Well, it was the Reagan administration behind the scenes, and all the documents that we found show that they were very involved. Technically, it was people directly with what's called standing to sue. So they were some of the trustees of the pension funds, and they found some pensioners that, you know, were worried that their returns were going to go down. So, but the lawsuit, the litigation was funded by business, and there's extensive evidence that the Reagan administration was working tirelessly behind the scenes to build support for the challenge, to provide evidence in the case, to help make the legal arguments. And so, but the city of Baltimore, they pulled out all the stops. I mean, they made the argument that they were not willing to be morally complicit in institutionalized and legalized racism. And they organized the ACLU and the National Lawyers Committee and churches and synagogues and you name it. And they got amicus briefs and expert witnesses, and they went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and they won. So, you know, and Baltimore was kind of a shining example of, you know, what worked. What worked was fighting hard, and what didn't work was caving.
So the Supreme Court decision, was that specific to pension fund divestment, or is it something that can be applied as legal precedent to Trump's threats over sanctuary cities today?
Well, the Supreme Court refused to review the Court of Appeals decision in Maryland, so that they let that decision stand. That is good legal precedent, but it, you know, everything of this nature is fact specific. Any kind of litigation like this, I think it's more of a moral example of how, against all odds and against incredible pressure, a city can stand up. And in fact, one of the tactics that the Reagan administration used, was to threaten to withhold money from all cities based on what's called federal preemption. Meaning, the Congress passed an anti-apartheid act, and basically, Reagan administration argued that anything that was stronger than that was preempted by federal law. And they also argued that, you know, cities shouldn't be involved in foreign affairs and you know, other types of legal arguments. Cities defied that threat. Over 120 cities and states defied that threat.
That's here in the United States. Over 100 cities and states in the United States. Wow.
Yes. There's this, you know, massive threat by the Reagan administration to withhold funds if, you know, and there was all of this direct pressure on mayors and city council members and governors to, you know, rescind the anti-apartheid laws. And the anti-apartheid movement was incredibly well organized. I mean, they had a civil disobedience in the South African embassy every single day of 1985. Every single day. Over 3,000 prominent people got arrested over that year in front of the South African embassy. And this same thing was going on in virtually every city across the country. It was an incredibly well-organized movement, powerful movement, that ultimately prevailed. But what it left in its wake was a set of tools, a playbook, as we're talking about it, that the Trump administration is now using. And not just with sanctuary cities, cities that are talking about not awarding contracts to companies bidding on the border wall, cities that might want to continue to do strong, to pass strong climate change legislation.
Right, there's a big movement to divest from fossil fuel companies as part of the climate justice movement.
Absolutely, and there's also a big movement to on behalf of Palestinians in the occupied territories,
right.
For example, there are Israeli security contractors that are bidding on major security contracts, and there's a movement to get cities to not award contracts to that company because of their human rights violations around the world. And so there are many examples, and the legacy or the remnants or the vestiges from the 80s with the Reagan administration are incredibly interesting and useful for modern day cities and states and activists.
So, Madeline, how do you compare the resistance to the Trump administration from city and state leaders? We know that when Trump pulled out of the Paris Accords, immediately mayors and governors started affirming that they would uphold the Paris Accord. And it's not clear if Trump immediately retorted with any threats to cut off federal funding or not. But do you see a pretty strong unified resistance on the issue of climate, on the issue of sanctuary cities and states, like you did on the issue of apartheid in the 80s?
Well, I think we're making history right now. And so when you're making history, it's harder to see clearly. I think that there, when we look back at history, which, the history from the 80s, there are so many lessons to be learned about a well-organized, powerful, morally strong movement that kept going for 10 years and or more than that and prevailed by and large, but also, there were things that happened at the federal level that, and many of these documents that we found were recently declassified. So it was hard to know. It's hard to know what's going on inside the White House and the federal government or institutions that are fighting to undercut all the gains that people have made in this country. So, but I do think that there's many things to learn from the Reagan playbook and from the playbook of the cities and states and the movement that fought back.
What advice then would you give to grassroots groups today who are, insisting on staying true to their ideals on protecting the rights of undocumented immigrants or protecting our planet's atmosphere? What advice would you give them in how they could push their elected officials to, make sure they have a strong spine against Trump?
Well, there are many lessons. I do think that the idea of comprehensive campaigns where we are moving people to do things like get arrested and fight hard and mobilize, but also moving policy and having really good research and having really good lawyers, all those things together, are going to make a movement. And then obviously getting involved in, politics in lots of different ways. One of the things that we really learned when we looked at the documents is that there was a lot of emphasis on the congressional action to oppose apartheid. There were two attempts, and finally there was a law passed in 1986, the Comprehensive Anti-Apartheid Sanctions Law. But what really bothered and what really upset the big businesses that were invested in South Africa and fighting the sanctions movement were the city and state efforts, the city and state sanctions. There are notes to the president. There are notes to the file that talk about this, how the San Francisco sanctions law is killing us, and how because of the Pittsburgh law, we're going to have to, pull out of South Africa. There was a lot of progress made at cities and states, and I think that it's important for the movement to keep that in mind, that the defiance and also the proactive policy for, fighting for what we believe and the, our vision of what this
Not
country
just
could
laying
be.
out what you're against, but what you're for.
Yes, and seeing the power in cities and states, as well as at the federal level, and then also, let's be realistic that the right wing has a 40-year playbook that where they have really reshaped the law and reshaped policy and reshaped kind of the framework for how we think about things, and we can't just buy into that. We have to do a similar piece of work where we're reshaping the framework of, we're not, we believe government has to have public purpose. We believe government has to stand for things that are not, only about efficiency and low price. They're about creating economic prosperity and about using the spending power to have a triple bottom line result. And I think, that's the kind of lesson we learned, in from the 80s to the present, is that the tool, one of the major tools that the Reagan administration used was to limit the ability of cities and states to spend federal money to the cheapest price, and to protecting the free market, and to strip away the ability of cities to do things like local hire and good jobs and sustainability. And those are the kinds of things that we need to now fight for, to change the frame, to make it about public purpose.
Madeline, give out the website again for your group Jobs to Move America.
Sure. Jobs to Move America, all one word, .org.
And we'll post that to our website later today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
My guest has been Madeline Janis, Executive Director of the group Jobs to Move America. The report that we've been discussing will be up on their website next Tuesday. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also, find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.